You can travel with a destination in mind, a list of places to see and experiences to have, but there's another kind of travel. Call it the mosey. It's what writer William Least Heat Moon termed it in his first book, Blue Highways. It was the story of a 3-month-long trip he took after losing his job and being left by his first wife. The book spent 34 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list and turned its author into something of a literary celebrity. Now, William Least Heat Moon has written a follow-up. It's called Roads to Quaz, and it's the story of a series of trips he and his new wife, Q, took along America's back roads. They stuck to small towns, two-lane highways, and rural diners. Travel, as he told Anne Strangechamps, by serendipity and by chance.
Well, I said in Blue Highways, which came out in 1983, I said that life doesn't happen along the interstates. It's against the law. Life really is beyond the windshield. It's just much easier to put oneself in touch with the landscape and the people who inhabit it when you're on the two lanes.
Some of the kinds of connections that you make on your trips, some of them are odd facts. Some are strange places, funny tastes like pickle pie, but mostly they come through stories, you know, stories that people tell you or stories that people kind of embody. What were some of the most memorable to you?
Well, I met a man out in Idaho, a retired dentist named Dick Smart, who has invented a version of something he calls a rail cycle. It's a bicycle, an ordinary mountain bike that he converts, and he sets it atop railroads. These are abandoned rails, and rides his bicycle down the railroad. When I heard about him, I went out to see him and took a ride on his rail cycle. We went up into the Idaho mountains, and we were going over one trestle after another on this abandoned line. These trestles were 60 feet in the air with no guardrails.
It sounds terrifying, but also gorgeous, because you must have gotten to see countryside that otherwise would be nearly inaccessible.
Oh, yes, that's his reason for doing it, because these rails take him into places that you cannot get unless you go in by foot, and even then that can really be arduous. But he comes upon wildlife that you just will not get that close to, because the wildlife doesn't recognize a man on a three-wheel machine as a man, so they don't run.
What did you see?
He's seen everything from a moose to fox to lynx to the little guys. He's had rattlers strike at the bike tire. That's happened several times.
Mm. You also went hunting for some last remaining bits of wilderness. I'm thinking about the mosey you took down through Florida.
I began in Florida following a friend of mine who was working on a book about the last Waterman's taverns, and it was tough to find many of these. They're really just about gone. But in so doing, we also stumbled into another story in a little place called Steenhatchee. It's a place of lowlands and swamps, and during the 70s and the 80s, it was a major place for bringing in initially marijuana. And if there are any listeners out there who have toked a joint sometime after about 1975 to say 1990 or something, there's a good chance that the marijuana that you were inhaling came through Steenhatchee, Florida.
How did you find out about it?
Well, people kept talking about this thing called the Road to Nowhere. And I thought that it was an economic phrase. They'd built this road hoping for economic development. Nothing happened. So economically, it was a road to nowhere. It turned out that it was a landing strip for planes hauling in dope and other drugs built by the county.
Wait, the county built it?
Yes, the county. It's a county road.
Did you drive on it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful piece of pavement, and it runs absolutely straight and level right into the swamp and then just stops about 2 miles short of the Gulf. And you drive this, and you think, there's nothing down here except nature, but why would they put this expensive road in? And then we began poking into that, and nobody wanted to talk. We kept getting shuffled off until finally every reporter in the country can tell you this. You keep pursuing, and finally you get somebody who gives you the lead that you need. And then things started opening up, and we found the whole story about the smuggling, which really wasn't that hidden. It's just that people there, I think, were embarrassed and maybe ashamed of some of it.
So when you go traveling and you want to find these local legends or these small stories or the interesting, eccentric people you come upon, how do you do it? Because most of us, you know, just drive through these little towns. Maybe we stop for lunch, but we don't have the experiences you do.
Well, you probably gave part of the reason right there in your last sentence, in that you really must stop, you must get out of the car, and then you must be willing to start talking with people. I follow Ralph Waldo Emerson's dictum that he said somewhere that everyone whom he met was his master, meaning a teacher. And I've always believed that everyone I meet in some way has a story that would probably interest me if I can get them to tell it and if they have the capacity to relate it well. That's the trick right there. People have the stories, but they can't always get them out.
You know, it strikes me that the other thing that your book couldn't be written without are all the small roadside cafes, the local taverns, all those third places, you know, that exist in our lives, kind of a mixture of public and private. Are those all still there?
I really have to look much harder now to find the local cafe, that third place where people in the community come to get together, and that's where the stories get passed. That's where an outsider has a chance of maybe penetrating for a short time the interior of a community. Those are a little harder to come up with now. I got into a place in southern Illinois. It's pretty remote, and I couldn't find breakfast one morning, so I stopped and I asked a fellow, I said, where does a man get breakfast around here? He said, oh, there's a spot up the road, and he told me how to get there. And I said, is it good food? He said, well, it's all right. He said, but it's real clean in there. So I thought, okay, I'll try it. I followed his directions, and I drove into a Dairy Queen. That's all they had there. Well, Dairy Queen is not a place where that will attract the old men who and women who are the caretakers of a community history, those people who sit around the table with their endless cups of coffee in the morning and swap stories. That just doesn't happen much in franchises. It can, but not commonly. Those places are endangered, and I think the links that they help engender with the community also are endangered.
William Leastheat Moon is the author of Roads to Quaz, an American Mosey. He talked with N. Strange Champs.